This is part one in a three-part series. This series contains discussions of violence and crime scenes. Listener discretion is advised. This is The Fall Line.
I got to hear my mom, they'll be at the house, they'll just be sitting around talking. We've been on the porch listening to music. She was real bubbly, I want to say, like always happy. She sing a lot, always smiling. She's real playful. I know she used to kiss me a lot. She just was happy. You know, even now I get sad because I remember her. Everybody liked her because I ride by on the way home from work. I ride by the building that she was living in. I look over there every day that I ride by. And I could see, you know, I just be wondering, like, if it's still the same, if those houses are surrounded. I just be looking, like, how did all this happen? Like, it's a house across the street. It's something right next door to it. How and when did nobody just not hear nothing? Yeah, whenever I ride by, I just look over there. I just shake my head because I just don't understand.
May 28th, 1991, Register, Georgia. It had been a hot spring in southeastern Georgia, and it was stepping quickly over into summer. After the long Labor Day weekend, the rural town was back in action. As much action as there could be with a population of just over 1,600. Register sits about 8 miles southwest of Statesboro on Muscogee Creek land. Statesboro is a bigger town than Register, but back then, it was still plenty small too. Just about 15,000 people, according to the 1990 census. But Statesboro was and is home to a university, Georgia Southern, and there was work to be had at the school and at two other nearby colleges, and in the retail and industry that surrounded Statesboro. Not many people went from Statesboro back to Register, way out in the country, where you might rent a house next to a tobacco field or a pasture. But in May of 1991, 27-year-old Geraldine DeLoach had decided to. Geraldine was a secretary at Georgia Southern University in Statesboro, and she was willing to make the commute back and forth. Because Geraldine had big plans for the little place she'd found to rent, out in Register. Once a meat locker, it had been converted into a unique little building, a big front room and an apartment tucked in the back. Geraldine's community group, the 2530 Social Club, could make excellent use of that space. They'd been doing good work around Statesboro and Register for a while, but Geraldine was ready to offer something new and something more. A single mother herself, she wanted to create a volunteer-run service that would operate out of that room. Then, moms could get out once in a while and have somewhere safe to take their kids. It would also make the perfect meeting place for Geraldine's club. Geraldine hadn't quite moved in, not fully anyway. Her bed was at the new house in Register, but she had some belongings back in Statesboro and was in the process of moving the last of her items into her new place. The little Register post office actually backed up against Geraldine's new rental. According to the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, the postmaster often saw her in the process of moving, coming and going in her black Jeep with different friends and relatives along to help her unpack and haul. Geraldine had recently learned to drive a stick shift, and she'd driven all the way to South Carolina just the weekend before. She'd taken her 3-year-old daughter, Victoria, with her. Victoria wasn't with her mother on the night of Memorial Day, May 27th. She'd stayed the evening with her Aunt Ava, who'd moved back to town from Missouri. Ava's husband was deployed, and she couldn't stand the Midwestern winter. She'd come home to Georgia to wait for his return. Ava and Geraldine were just 2 years apart, and best friends as well as sisters. So Ava kept Victoria while a local high school student helped Geraldine with a few more loads of boxes and accompanied her as she ran errands around town, going to the laundromat and washing her Jeep. It was a busy day and night. Ava was one of the last people to talk to Geraldine on Monday night. They chatted on the phone about Victoria's role in their brother Rayford's upcoming wedding. Geraldine planned to leave a bag of Victoria's hair accessories for her sister to pick up outside so Ava could do the little girl's hair. She'd stick them out on the front porch of her new place. Ava was one of the first people to realize something was wrong. On Tuesday, May 28, 1991, Geraldine should have been at work. Her Jeep wasn't at the little house in Register. The postmaster hadn't seen it, and the construction workers who'd been out near her place, they hadn't either. In fact, they hadn't seen anything. But someone did see Geraldine's Jeep in an apartment complex called Fox Ridge that she hadn't lived at for months, all the way out in Statesboro. That sighting by a cousin who knew her car shouldn't be there set off a series of phone calls. Where was Geraldine? Ava called Geraldine's office, but a male coworker answered instead. Ava thought her sister had stepped out of the building when he said, "She's not in." So Ava didn't think too much of it. Not then. Eventually, Ava and Victoria headed over to Geraldine's to retrieve the hair accessories, the bag that was supposed to be sitting out front of the new place. By then, it was afternoon. But when they arrived, the bag wasn't there. Ava decided to check around back at the entrance to Geraldine's apartment. Maybe she was home. What Ava saw, laying in the yard between Geraldine's house and the post office, was a shape on the ground. It took her some time to realize that she was looking at a body, draped in a blanket. She could tell by the hand that wasn't quite covered. At the time, Ava didn't even process that it was the same blanket that she'd loaned to Geraldine just a few days prior. Somehow, no one had noticed, even with all the construction activity, the post office. It made no sense that a person's body could just be lying there, no one having done anything. Ava couldn't know then that her sister had been placed sometime during the day, moved to that location. Later, Ava would feel like she'd almost blacked out. It was the shock. It was difficult to piece together those moments. She could remember that she knew she had to get them out of there, away from the apartment, the site. And she knew she had to find a phone. We first became aware of Geraldine Deloach's case in November of 2020. That's when the GBI's Region 5 office reached out to us about featuring Geraldine's story on our show. Special Agent in Charge John Durden, you might remember him from Season 4, has a particular focus on closing cold cases. He'd assigned a fresh agent, Maddie Vogelsang, to Geraldine's unsolved case.
This was one of my first cases. I actually got assigned several older cases when I became an agent, and a lot of times what they'll do is assign newer agents the older cases so that you've got a fresh pair of eyes looking at them. And around the time I started, there's been a push to kind of go back and look at these older cases more than just letting them, you know, sit there in cabinets. And so we've had kind of a renewed interest in that, I know, for our agency. But this was one of the first cases that I was assigned, and the way I approached it was to kind of go through, and at first I just read it and I took notes on things that I had questions about or things that I thought might be important. I marked all the evidence to, you know, track it down and make sure that we had it. I made a list of all the relevant people and, you know, whether they needed to be talked to again, made sure we had all their information, and kind of tried to get together the crime scene facts and just the facts of the case and write a summary, because I know for me it's easier to have everything kind of condensed down when you're looking through a lot of different cases to jog your memory. And the other thing that has been a big focus, I know for us, has been the DNA aspect of the older cases. And so I went through and marked anything that I thought could be used to potentially find DNA. I was contacted by Geraldine's daughter, and she contacted me and wanted to talk about the case and meet with me. And so we ended up several months later meeting with Geraldine's family. She has a lot of brothers and sisters, as well as her mother. And all of them have been very involved in this case from the beginning and are very passionate about seeing it solved. So we had a meeting with them at the Bullitt County Sheriff's Office, and we were able to update them on some new information and where we plan to go with the case. And the family expressed that they were interested in making sure that Geraldine's name was out there and making sure that her case was made public and that people, especially in the area, heard about her case and it was on their radar.
Did you get the sense when you talked to them that they felt as though her case had not gotten much media attention?
I think so. I think that's definitely something that they were concerned about. We live in a very different time period now with social media, and that obviously wasn't around much at the time. And so that's definitely something that I know that they have wanted. And I think it's also important to them just to, you know, keep Geraldine's memory alive. All of them, you know, it's not like they've moved on and forgotten about her. They're very involved, and, you know, they have a Facebook page for her memorial, and they contact me regularly, and I contact them when I have information, and we stay in touch and make sure that, you know, even if we aren't necessarily making huge strides, we're still working on the case every day.
The GBI put us in contact with Geraldine's daughter, Victoria, now a woman in her 30s, and Geraldine's large family. As a result, we conducted more interviews for this series than we ever have before. And that's important. Because to understand this case and what happened and how you might be able to help, you need to know Geraldine DeLoach. And the people who loved her, who still love her, are the best ones to tell you. Geraldine was born in the Register Statesboro area in September of 1963. She was a middle child in a total of 11. Her younger brother, Rayford, told us about what it was like for them.
We grew up in the country, you know, a small town. Statesboro, Register area. You know, kids, we had a large family, but, you know, for the most part, you know, real close. We always worked together, helped, you know, our father on the farm and everything. All of us, you know, went to school together and everything. And, just close family. You know, she was like 3 years older than me. So me and her spent a lot of time together, just doing school and, you know, summers, so we were closer in age. So we spent a lot of time together.
The eldest sibling in the family was Marie. Being the oldest, Marie was well out of the house by the time Geraldine and Rayford hit their teens. But there was a time when 8 of the children were in school at once, and she remembered what it was like to catch the bus.
You know, at one point in time, it was 4 girls and 4 boys, and when the school bus would come, you know, everybody would be right at the bus stop. You know, we would come out in the line. You'd always make the bus driver always upset. You know, it's like, why don't y'all come on? So, you know, here was one would come out, and then a few seconds later, here comes another. So we had this long line that would be coming. So it would always be, he couldn't drive off because there's always still one coming afterwards.
Their sister, Ava, was close to both Rayford and Geraldine in age. She was able to tell us a lot about what it was like growing up out in the country.
Well, I'm one of 11 siblings, so that alone is like, I guess you've got your own little basketball team, maybe. You know, you just create whatever little games you can or could outside. But of course, you know, my dad was the farmer and he was a sharecropper, so we had things we had to do when it came to the farm. Especially during the summertime and springtime. We had to work in those tobacco fields growing up. And there were plenty of gardens we had to help out with. So once my dad had, you know, planted the gardens, you know, and those peas and butter beans and whatever else was out there, when it was time to go out there and get it out of the garden, we had to go out there and get it. I look forward to the special peanut season when it was time for us to pull off those peanuts off of the vines. And my daddy would pull up a bunch of the vines and bring them home. And all of us would be out there pulling them off, you know, getting, because we love boiled peanuts. So once we got them off and took them inside the house and washed them up and put some water on the stove with, in that pot with those peanuts, those are some fond memories. Working in tobacco fields, that was real work, really hard work. Because in Georgia, during the summer, Southeast Georgia, it gets pretty hot and humid. But we were out there in those fields. And I don't know if many folks are familiar with tobacco and how it all works. There's a lot that goes in it. I mean, you're out there in that sun and you're topping tobacco. And topping is just getting that little, it's like a little flower bud that's at the top of the tobacco plant. And you go down those rows and you're just breaking those tops off of the tobacco plant. And you go down those long rows of tobacco. And then you come back down the next long rows of tobacco. And we practically from sun up to, you know, almost sundown, we're out there in those tobacco fields. And that's kind of, when it comes to the farm, that's kind of how we spent our summers. When we were old enough to get out there and help and do our little parts, that's what we did. So, and it was hard work. I say today that it gave us a real work ethic. You know, I don't know what being lazy is, and I don't think any of my siblings know what being lazy is, because we worked hard. At a very young age, we worked hard. I mean, maybe the older siblings would say, oh, y'all didn't do a whole lot. We did our part to contribute to whatever we needed to do on the farm. Now, my mom was a great cook. Of course, my dad being a farmer, being a sharecropper, we had, when it came to vegetables and all the meats you wanted, we had that. Because when it comes to cows, that means you had the beef. You wanted so all the steaks you wanted, we had that. Because, you know, they processed it and you put it in. We had a deep freezer and you put it in the freezer. And we had our chickens, so we had our fresh eggs. So, yes, my mom, great cook. I don't know if you've heard of stew beef with the tomatoes and okra and the beef in there, some potatoes. She made those great homemade biscuits. And the fresh, what I used to love was the fresh corn. Imagine having fresh corn out of the garden. Then the person that my dad worked with, they had the fig trees. We had pecan trees in our yard and the grapevines and the blackberries.
The Deloach children had plenty to do on the farm, but they also kept themselves entertained. And according to the siblings, Geraldine was a big part of that fun. Every single family member and friend we spoke to described Geraldine with the words happy and bubbly. Her sister Marie, the eldest, told us about how Geraldine got her nickname, Hootie. Many of her brothers and sisters still call her that today.
She's just always bubbly. My daddy gave her the name Hoot Nanny, and that's where Hootie came from. And Hootie was a show that, you know, was on TV a long, long time ago. It was a dance show. It was funny, hilarious. And, you know, she was just so bubbly. He would just come in there and he would go, hoop nanny, hoop nanny, hoop nanny. And she would just be, you know, being herself. So that kind of stuck.
Geraldine's mother, May Knight, remembered her daughter's love of celebrating her family as a group and individually.
And she liked to celebrate our birthdays. And, you know, about being so many of us, you know, we couldn't. She told us if we got older, she said, if you can't celebrate your birthday every 10 years, do that. Even though it was a long time, but, you know, that's what she said. Well, you know, and that's what we do them regular than that, but that was her thing. She said, if you can't do it, but once every 10 years, do that.
Although many might have described Geraldine as outgoing, Ava, close in age and her closest friend, saw another side to her. Geraldine might be boisterous in the house, but out in public, she could be much more timid, at least when she was little.
We grew up in the church, and we grew up singing in our choir. Because my dad, back in the day, he used to sing in this quartet. So we grew up singing in the choir, and my sister Deborah, Geraldine, and myself, we were the Deloach Trio.
And so when we would go to church, because we were in church so much, we got up the nerve to start singing on the church program. But Geraldine and myself, we were the too shy of that trio. So my sister Deborah would always basically lead all the songs. Now, when we were at home practicing all the time, now me and Geraldine, we try to, we're going to lead the song this time. And but when it was all said and done, my sister Deborah would be the lead singer of the group, because we were just too shy. But we'd get up there and sing, but we were shy, and we're not going to look at you while we're singing. We're trying to look at each other so we don't get up there and mess up by looking out in the audience.
Geraldine's early life had its frightening moments too. Her older brother, Ray, talked to us about two incidents that occurred in her childhood. The family often calls Ray Mint, a nickname he picked up from the barber when he was a young boy, as he'd always asked for a peppermint when he got a haircut. He told us that he's always felt protective over his sisters, even those who are older than him, even now as they're adults in their 50s and 60s.
I remember when she was an infant and, our house burned down. You know, I couldn't have been that old, you know, 5, 6, maybe. I hadn't started school yet. We was living out in Redditor, Georgia. But my mom did do some house cleaning, but she was cleaning this house that day, not far from where we was living. And we was living in this big, big, great big pasture, like Little House on the Prairie. And my mom worked there. She was working there that morning when our house started burning. And, I got all the kids out because Geraldine was a baby. So it was 2, me, 3, Chris, Deborah, Ava, and Geraldine was the infant. God, that's a lot of kids.
Mm.
Wow. But, and our house burned to the ground. But, you know, I managed to get everybody out. Scooped up Geraldine, you know, my mom seen, I guess she seen the smoke. She was running across that pasture wide open. I'm talking about my mom was running. But we was all safe. It was hard. I remember it was rough, even rougher then after that happened. But we made it. We moved from there to another little cabin or whatever down from the one that had burned down. But, yeah. I was, I saved it in. I saved all of us. We all were saved. But, you know, a couple of years after that, maybe because Geraldine wasn't in school. One day, I didn't go to school for something. But me and Geraldine was inside. I was outside. My mom was outside just cleaning the yard. And I hear Geraldine scream. And I ran into the house and her dress was on fire. Because we had a fireplace. And I guess, the little cotton dress from Sears Roebuck, it heated up. She backed up or got too close to that fire, man. And that was a terrible morning because, I mean, when she died, she had this big old burnt scar. I mean, it was like wide as a stomach on the side. From then, I don't think she couldn't have been no more than 2 years old. Something. She might have, I don't know. She was really, really young.
So you saved her twice.
Yeah, I did. And I really always think about God, why couldn't have been in the right place to save her this time, the last time, That's what always stuck with me. And still till today, not being able to save her, it was sort of bothered me. Like I was the chosen one, but the last time I wasn't around. So I don't know. Really rough carrying it all the time.
Geraldine recovered, and as she went through school, she made plenty of friends and plenty of plans. Most of her siblings planned to go in the military or to college. For Ava, it was school in Augusta, and it was natural that Geraldine would come and visit. Ava remembers that they went out dancing, went to church, and caught the city bus around town. One night, though, they thought that they'd catch a ride with a university basketball player that Ava knew. They spotted him in his car and waved and asked for a ride.
So here we are, our little silly, naive selves. So the car stops. We get into the car. We literally get in this man's car. Three of us sitting in the back of his car. And I'm just laughing, thinking about it. Sitting in the back of his car. I looked at the driver. Oh, my God. It is, it is not the basketball player that we know. He just looked like him. And guess what we had to do? We had to do a quick exit. We said, okay, we can get out right now. And we laughed at ourselves. And my sister Jersey was like, I thought you all knew this person. I guess he was like, okay. They act like they know me, but I really don't know them, but we're just going to go with this. But we were so naive. You cannot do that today. It is not safe. So, but that is such a great memory. Coming up, you know, working on the farm and doing all that hard work. We knew, you know, we wanted a better situation for ourselves. So we knew that we were either going to go to college after we graduated from high school, or we were going to go to the military.
When it was Geraldine's turn, she boarded a Greyhound bus bound for the University of West Georgia. That's a school in Carrollton, nearly 250 miles northwest of Statesboro and Register. The town near the Alabama line is small, not a big city by any stretch, but it was far away from home. Geraldine's close friend, Alethea, Athea for short, was headed that way too, and she was nervous.
We went to school together, high school together. We graduated in 1981. I did not know that we had chose the same college to attend until we was on the Greyhound bus that morning. And I was like, okay, where are you going? And she said, I'm going to West Georgia. I say, so am I. At that time, neither one of us had a car, so we did have to catch the bus. It took us about 5 or 6 hours to get to West Georgia, which is now known as the University of West Georgia. Because they stopped every little town there was. So we stayed in Downs Hall. We lived there the entire time we were in school. How can I say? Geraldine stayed on one side and I stayed on another side of Downs Hall. And then we would meet downstairs in the kitchen area and, you know, cook, have fun, you know, just out and about. I remember our first night getting to school, we had met somebody else that we knew from Statesboro. And I mean, we walked the whole campus all night long, you know, just laughing and talking. And those are the things that I remember, you know, about Geraldine. And when we took a break from college, that was one summer, we were supposed to be in school, but we came home anyway. And we had a job at this Claxton Poetry. I didn't last but a week. I told Geraldine, I'm going to have to find something else because that smell and everything, but she continued on.
That was like Geraldine. When she decided to do something, she did it. Many described her as kind and caring, but never a pushover. She was fierce and funny and magnetic. She was also incredibly motivated and wanted her family to succeed right along with her. Her brother Rayford, close to her in age, remembers how Geraldine helped him when it was his turn to graduate.
When I was getting ready to almost graduate high school, I didn't know if I was going to college. I hadn't made up my mind or anything like that, or if I was going, you know, to the military. So I was undecided. So then I finally made up my mind that maybe I'd go to college. So she, you know, I was dragging my feet. So she did all my paperwork to get me admitted into college, you know, because I really wasn't sure if I wanted to do it, but she was, you know, she took all my paperwork and submitted everything that I was supposed to have, and, you know, and I did get, you know, accepted to a school, but then at the last minute, 2 weeks before I was supposed to join, you know, school was supposed to start, I just made my mind up to go to the Air Force, but she did all my paperwork for me.
And with such a big family, it was natural that Geraldine would become the wise older one in college, whose younger relatives could visit, like her cousin Stacy, who made the trip to West Georgia to visit the school, and Geraldine. Stacy was a teenager, and it was 1983.
We had a time of our lives. It was so wonderful. But one great thing that I remember from that encounter was, at the time, Color Purple, the book had just came out, and she encouraged me to read it. You know, she gave me the hard copy. Mm-hmm. And so I did, and that was like the first time that I read a book for leisure and enjoyed it. And it was like a 300-page book, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And so that inspired me to like to read more, you know, as far as things that I like, that I could read and learn and get wisdom and knowledge from. So I got that basically from the book that she shared with me. She was beautiful. Not only a beautiful soul, but also a beautiful individual. Like when she would put on her eyeliner, that was the first time that, you know, you can burn the tip of the eyeliner and it gives that perfect line. I got that from her. She was amazing with makeup, and she was always like a trendsetter type person, you know, like when they was doing the asymmetric hairstyle, she told my mom what to do, how she wanted one side shorter than the other, and then it became a popular thing. But she was that type of person.
But Geraldine was still plenty of fun. Marie, who was living in Atlanta and pursuing her PhD, was able to spend time with her sister for the first time on more equal adult footing.
It's just so many of us running around there that... like I said, sometimes they start running together with the middle little ones on the tail end of the siblings. I kind of got to know her better when she had graduated high school and she attended West Georgia College. And so West Georgia being so close to Atlanta, on weekends, she and her friends would, they'd come to Atlanta, hang out. So I got to know her, you know, got to see that side of her and kind of, you know, just kind of see what direction she wanted to go, what she wanted to do. And she was always bubbly. You know, she had a lot of friends and they would come and hang out and do their thing and then go back. So, I kind of got to know her then. She'd call and make these pretend calls like she is, she could be an Avon lady or she could be selling something. She was just always good at getting me and disguising and making up who she was. And then all of a sudden start laughing because she just was thinking, you know, you don't know it's me by now. And so that I was just always easy. It was easy for her to fool and trick me. And she did that.
After college, Geraldine moved back to Statesboro, where she worked a number of jobs. She eventually settled in at Georgia Southern as a departmental secretary. She began to build an adult life for herself, but she was very attuned to the needs of her community, too. Geraldine's mother, May Knight, told us that her daughter had always been that way, concerned about other people. But as an adult, the need to care for others became more pronounced.
And because Geraldine's main thing to me, she was always wanting to help people. She came back to Statesboro, began to work at Georgia Southern as a secretary in the foreign language department there. Yeah, I can remember, you know, like she would maybe be out and pass the kids, you know, waiting for the school bus. Sometimes they wouldn't have the warmest jacket, and she would come home and call me, wanted to know if I had an extra coat or something like that to give to this child. And I recall one Thanksgiving but when she went to work, there was a mother with some babies. And this mother didn't get her help that she needed, and she was talking about what they had for that Thanksgiving. So Geraldine called me from the job, wondered that I had anything left for mom. I said, yes. Except, you know, I didn't have any sweet potato pies, so I go in and cook the sweet potato pies for her. And this lady comes by and gets the meal. And I'm thinking about the things that she did after she grew up. That basically tells you more, but to me, tells you more what kind of person she was.
It was that drive that would eventually lead Geraldine and her sister Ava to start a group, the 2530 Social Club, through their church, so they could do more good work. You'll hear more on that in our next episode. Geraldine eventually started a newsletter, too, to share community news and rally people together around events and good work. But before that work began, she was a young woman living in her hometown. She had friends and relationships. One of her boyfriends was a friend of her older brother, Ray. That relationship would lead to her pregnancy with her only child, Victoria, who was born in 1987. Our next episode will cover that period of Geraldine's life, how much she loved Victoria, and the life she had planned for them in their new home in Register, next to the post office. We've talked a lot about Geraldine's kindness and happiness and good nature. But despite her bright outlook and bubbly disposition, she had to face struggles and problems, just like we all do. Her sister Marie remembers Geraldine's method for dealing with frustration.
I remember once going to her apartment. You know, I'd come home to visit and I stayed with her. But I just remember when you knew when she got mad or upset about something, because she would start cleaning, you know, just clean, clean, clean. I don't know if any of the other siblings noticed that, but I just remember that night I thought something must be going on because I was trying to sleep and she was just up in the middle of the night just cleaning, 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 cleaning. So, and she always had a clean apartment and all that, but I just remember that night she was really going into it. She had the Clorox going and wow, I thought, I better not say anything, because when you riled her up, you would know.
Her older brother, Ray, had another story, one that's important in the context of what would come later, in 1991. Geraldine was not afraid to defend herself or the people that she loved.
I remember this girl came this girl came to see me one time out in Register at my mom and dad, where we was living. And, but this girl that was coming to see me, Hootie and the girl's sister didn't get along in school. I did not know that, you know, but Hootie was stepping on the, was sitting on the steps when they drove up. I didn't, you know, and, but the girl that came to see me, her sister, she acted like her and Geraldine got along real good. And when they left, Geraldine said, "Mint, I had my box color ready for Teresa." I said, "What you mean?" She said, "Me and that girl did not get along in school. I don't know why she come out. She must have been scared." I was like, "Girl, please. Ain't nobody going to come to your house and beat you up. I don't care." She was ready for it. I laughed about that for years. We joked about it. When it would come to time protecting herself, she was going to do that, you know. And I'm pretty sure she fought back and fought hard for her life that night, you know. But she, no, she didn't take being pushed around and pushed over and trampled over. She didn't know. She did not play that at all.
That's another thing many people said. The Geraldine they knew would have fought hard for her life, for her daughter, for everything she'd imagined for the two of them. It was almost impossible to believe that someone or someones had been willing to end such a vibrant life. The Deloach family wanted answers back in 1991. And now, coming up on the 30th anniversary of Geraldine's death, they haven't stopped searching for them. The investigation felt, to the family, like it stalled out in the 1990s. But with new eyes on the case, there's hope that resolution can come for Geraldine. Even decades later, her vibrancy seeps into every conversation people have about her. People like her older brother, Ray, who are still trying to process how a killer in their own hometown could have possibly taken such a life away.
Hootie was, she was something else, man. She was so, you know, when you know people just love life, everybody don't seem like they love life and love living. You know, because they wake up and they always sad, they always got problems, always got something going on. But you can tell when people really, really enjoy life and enjoy living it, you know. So she was that kind of person. Very much. She was good people. She was good people. I love her. She's my tight girl. Me and Hootie was real tight too.
Next time on The Fall Line, we cover the 2530 Social Club, Geraldine's life with her daughter, Victoria, the period leading up to Geraldine's death, the scene of the crime, and the 1991 investigation. If you have any information regarding the murder of Geraldine DeLoach, please call the GBI Region 5 office at 912-871-1121. Thank you for listening. The Fall Line is a fully independent show, and we appreciate listener support. It allows us to do research, obtain FOIAs, pay our content advisors, and support and donate to the causes we care about. If you try out the products we advertise, please use our sponsor codes. It really helps. And if you'd like to support our show and stories we cover, join us on Patreon. We are raising Patreon funds to continue to fund the Milberg Twins billboard, begin a therapy fund for families who've been on the show, and many other projects. You can read a public post about those goals on our Patreon page. On Patreon, you can get early release, ad-free versions of our regular episodes, plus blogs and videos for only $5 a month. We've also added video live streams, which all patrons can enjoy starting at just a dollar. The Fall Line is written, hosted, and researched by Laura Norton, with additional research by Brian Waters, Kim Fritz, and Jessica Ann. Family and law enforcement interviews by Brooke Hargrove. Produced and engineered by Maura Curry. Content advisement by Brandy C. Williams, Liv Fallon, and Vic Kennedy. And, as always, our most special thanks to Angie Dodd. Currently, our monthly donation is going to the Black and Missing Foundation.